What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Today, we are talking with Matt Babasek there at West Mesquite High School. At West Mesquite High School, he used to be down here at Pasadena Memorial High School, and that's where I met Matt. We're going to be talking about functional rehab and how to break free from a routine. And today is also October 7th, which we're doing our Student Athletic Trainer Scavenger Hunt. And this year is the first year we're incorporating other schools, so like Klein Collins and Hereford up in Amarillo. I know South Houston is supposed to be doing it, so several other schools are supposed to be involved in that. I would definitely encourage, if you're on Instagram, check out hashtag SAT Scavenger Hunt 2015. That's one word, SAT Scavenger Hunt 2015. Again, one word on Instagram. It's pretty funny to see some of the assistant principals doing just random dances or just some of the silly things that the kids are doing and having a lot of fun with. So definitely check that out there if you're on Instagram. SAT Scavenger Hunt 2015. Yep. All right, so there we go. I already talked about our guest is Matt. He has been in the profession for about 8 years. He graduated from SFA, I believe, and then he's been married for 14 years. He's got 4 kids, and this last one I know for sure, but I think more than that, he had at home in a swimming pool. So maybe we can talk about how you trained functionally for catching a baby in a swimming pool.
Yes.
So, all right, I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. Sitting right beside me is the one, the only...
Jeremy Shaw.
Joshua.
Jasmine.
All right, Yvette's mic is turned off. I knew that was going to happen. All right, say it again, Yvette.
Yvette.
There we go.
Cooper.
Tiana.
We got Daniela, Ariana, and Mariana taking notes. We got Melissa, who is paying attention over there on Skype. We got Misty, who is taking pictures. Misty, stand up, take some pictures. Nick should be switching cameras around. Nelly and Juanita are on Twitter, so using hashtag DSMB, you can join the conversation, or if you're logged in, like Jasmine, why don't you read off those names of who else logged in, because there's somebody else logged in, too. Those names, Jasmine, read off those names that are... Jasmine.
Mikey Brown, I don't know how to say that.
Just say the first name.
Rob, Israel, Carlos, John, and I don't know how to say that.
All right, so we got several people logged in there. All right, so... appreciate you logging in, joining our conversation, and Jasmine should be watching that, so if you have comments there, hopefully she can catch those and throw them out there. All right, without much further ado, we're talking about functional rehab.
First, let's start with the working definition of functional rehab.
The definition that I kind of crafted, I took something from online and then put my own little tweak on it, but I said... the return of an athlete to highly complex movement patterns required for athletic participation. In addition to the standard flexibility, strength, and cardiovascular capacity, I added agility, proprioception, and then increased mobility and stability at the proper segments. With the final goal being to get the athlete, to return the athlete to a state better than their pre-injury state.
All right, so that last part, I think, is really what I was looking for, to return them to a state better than their pre-injury state, because complex movement patterns required for athletic participation in addition to flexibility, strength, cardiovascular capacity, agility, proprioception, increased mobility, and stability at the proper segment. It's quite a mouthful. So,
yes.
So that was your sum-up definition, your one sentence is return them to a state better than pre-injury. Is that fair enough, a working definition for functional movement for today?
Yes. That would be a good summary.
All right.
So why are you so passionate about functional rehab?
I see it as a way to break the recurrent injury cycle and to reduce the number of non-contact injuries that we see.
All right, so you break in the injury cycle. How does functional movement help break the injury cycle?
With the final goal of getting them in a better state than they were pre-injury, I see functional rehab as taking them beyond just the, okay, there's no more swelling, you can lay down and have full range of motion and it doesn't hurt, but if I just ship you back out to the field at that point, we haven't necessarily corrected why you got hurt in the first place. So I see it as the, let's fix the underlying problem and then send you back out there instead of just, oh, you feel better? Okay, have fun.
All right, I definitely agree with that. I think one of the parts of the job that us as athletic trainers do the worst is preventative maintenance. But then after that, it's just we're returning them to play instead of fixing the problem. because as we were talking about before we started the recording, before we started the actual show, it's time constraint. You know, we have 30 kids coming in at once, so I can only do what I can teach them to do on their own. And so, you know, and then obviously they don't want to come in the morning here. I've literally probably had 10 people. No, I'm going to say 5 people come in for morning treatments so far this year. And that's maybe. And so it's hard, you know, I can't get one-on-one time. Then it'd be perfect, but I can't because they don't come in. And then after school, well, who knows what's going on after school. So, yeah, I think it's the hardest thing, but it's probably the most valuable thing. That's why I want to learn more about it, maybe more efficient ways to do it and some better ways to teach them to do it on themselves. So that's why we're talking to you, the expert, Matt Babicek.
What are some non-functional rehab exercises athletic trainers normally use?
I think, trying to think of a good way to say this, I think a lot of what we start off with basic range of motion, basic stretching, and it just kind of stays the same. It doesn't progress, and we're kind of killing time as the athlete's healing mechanisms kick in. But I see exercises like for hip or knee, doing like straight leg raises. At some point, if they already have quad tone and they have good range of motion, we need to move past that. I really dislike machine-based stuff, leg curls, leg extensions, leg press, especially when that is kind of the end. I really dislike leg curl and leg extension because I don't see them at all as functional. I tell a kid, if you're sitting down or you're lying down on the field, something went terribly wrong. And then the kind of catch-all that apparently all the kids know about somehow is ice and stem, and that they just want that only, and they think that's going to be a miracle cure. But I've seen where you can kind of get trapped in the, well, I'll just give you ice and stem, and then hopefully you're better tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Talk more about the machine. So like the Smith machine, you know, it's like a squat rack that does you strengthen there. Is that may be good for early muscle rebuilding? So maybe somebody has a knee problem or something like that. So then maybe that's good for surgery, or you're just saying like, don't do that at all. Just use your own body weight squat.
I prefer the own body weight squat just because everybody is so different. And one thing I'm learning more about now is hips. Like everybody's, most of us aren't even symmetrical left to right, but how the femur sits in the acetabulum. Some people may work great, but I think if you lump everybody into that, you're going to get some kids who it doesn't work or it actually can make things worse.
Yeah, as you said that, not symmetrical, I sat up straight because I was leaning to the right there. Oh, so that's one of the things I'm supposed to be working on is my posture. So, because I know that my right side, if I'm sitting like on bleachers, so then my legs are, or my hip flexors are, what is it, hyperflexed? Yeah, and so my hip is extended. I don't know, I'm getting confused. But so if I'm sitting in that position, like if I'm sitting on bleachers and leaning forward, then my back starts to hurt a lot. But it's because that one side is tighter than the other. Just like you said, it's not symmetrical. So I got to figure out the best ways to move past that. So I really liked what I've been going through at Rosti, some of the stuff that they've been teaching me. And again, it's probably stuff that I already knew, but it's just somebody to guide and instruct. So that's pretty cool. All right, so before this, I put out some stuff on social media, on Twitter or whatever, and had a couple people comment talking about the ways that they like to incorporate the sport, so you know, being more functional with the sport as we're doing the rehab. So there's a couple people's comments. Gianisha is going to read for you.
Jesse Lopez says, using the equipment they use in sport,
so like the volleyball or, you know, a bat, like swinging a bat to get them to return to play there.
BMath_trainer says, headers on BOSU ball for soccer help with core stability and
proprioception. So proprioception. I think that's Casey Pyle there, and it's a Veterans Memorial athletic trainer. I looked it up, but I can't remember now. I think I saw it was Casey. So all right, so let's go back to the comment there from Jesse. Matt, what do you think about using their sport equipment, and how beneficial is that in returning them to sport?
I think there's a huge psychological component to that. Especially kids doing longer rehab, the more they're in the athletic training room and not with their team, they can kind of get, you know, they can get depressed, they can get frustrated. But if you can incorporate or kind of give them that as hey, look, you're still doing sports related stuff. You're still involved. I think that in addition to the physiological benefits, I think there's a huge psychological benefit to that.
All right. So what about, as again, we're talking about functional. So what Casey said was headers on a BOSU ball for soccer. It obviously in real life, you're never going to stand on a BOSU ball in any sport unless you're maybe doing CrossFit or something. So what are your thoughts there?
I like that. I think I'm going to steal that one. I see a huge benefit to that in probably the way most kids get hurt. Heading the ball in soccer is kind of jumping and being out of control. So they can be unstable on standing on a BOSU and doing their sport-specific stuff. I can see how there would be a carryover there to maybe when they jump and then they're not just kind of flailing in the air and get elbowed in the head and fall down.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. So
I'm going to steal that one. So thank you.
There you go, Casey. Good work. Good work. All right. So then Carlos, he was joining us for the first time inside the chat room, and he said he likes PNF exercises for shoulders. What do you think there?
I love them. I love, you know, the contract relax for stretching. I think it works better than just kind of cranking on a kid's arm and hoping, you know, say their posterior capsule loosens up. I really like the exercises, having them, you know, resisted through D1 and D2 patterns. But like we talked about beforehand, that it's the time constraint on that is what gets in the way, I think.
I definitely agree. All right, so let's go body part by body part. We've already talked about some of these, and I know you've listed out a lot, so you've helped out my students that are supposed to be copying down everything you say, so it helps them out quite a bit. But let's go with ankle. Jasmine, we have any comments in the chat room you'd like to throw out? All right, so Matt, as you talk about some of the stuff for your ankle, I'm going to peek over there and read those.
Okay, like we talked about earlier, I love the BAPS board for restoring normal range of motion to the, I guess we can say, the subtalar and the talocurl joint. And then adding, I like to add the weights in, especially once they get up to level 3 or 4 and have no problem, to strengthen up some of those lower extremity muscles. I really like, it's really easy, and so some kids don't get it, but either standing or half kneeling with one foot in front of the other, and then kind of do a little lunge toward the wall. So we're trying to get dorsiflexion, teaching them how to keep their heel down, how to keep their arch going while going into forced dorsiflexion, which a lot of kids will lose post-ankle sprain or post-ankle injury. That requires a little more teaching because they think it's supposed to be hard or they're supposed to feel a whole bunch of stuff, but we're just trying to push some normal range of motion back through the joints.
All right, so back up and let's walk through that again, because I just want to make sure that I understand clearly. So go ahead and tell me that exercise that you're doing.
Okay, so I have them stand face the wall, go into a split stance with one foot in front of the other, and then lean into the wall so their hands are on the wall, and then use their hip or their back leg to drive their front knee towards the wall. And if they keep their foot flat, that front foot flat, and keep their arch in good shape, they're essentially, it's, I guess, active-assisted dorsiflexion. Which we know, you know, post ankle sprain, they're going to lose dorsiflexion. And this is, I think, a little more functional way to drive that motion back into the joint. And then I would say if that's uncomfortable, you can go down to half kneeling so there's less pressure through the foot, and then progress them up to standing.
All right, so is there a time where you wouldn't use this exercise at all? I mean, it seems like if there was like a high ankle sprain, then you wouldn't want to drive that up there.
Yeah, if there's, you know, high ankle sprain, you don't want to shove the talus up there any further and make it worse. But lateral ankle sprain, once they can, I would say, walk normal again, if they're off crutches or off a boot, a good way to get them to dorsiflex through their own body versus, you know, just a TheraBand.
All right. Talk about how you think the BAPS board is functional. Again, you know, I'm just thinking, because, you know, I'm thinking of an occupational therapist is someone that, you know, is going to have a person climbing a ladder because that's what they do at work, or someone that's going to be having them lift wooden boxes because they lift, you know, they work for UPS. So how is the BAPS board functional?
I know, and I think Gary Gray, who I cannot remember what exactly he is, but he's known as the father of function. I think he was kind of the co-creator with some other people of the BAPS board to, so instead of just a wobble board where you have a circle with a little half ball in the bottom, the BAPS board's supposed to allow the ankle to go through its normal, I guess, when you combine subtalar motion and talar crawl motion, that the BAPS board's supposed to be biomechanically correct. Which I think the acronym is Biomechanical Ankle Platform System, which is a mouthful, which I can understand why they called it BAPS. But I think it is supposed to be the functional version of just a wobble board. Because I know when you're standing on it, the axis of motion is offset because you have greater inversion than you do eversion. And you have greater plantar flexion than you do dorsiflexion, so the BAPS board's set up to accommodate that, whereas a wobble board would not be.
All right. I guess I should have looked that up beforehand, huh?
I'm going to have to go back and read the instruction book now.
Yeah, because one of the comments in the chat room was talking about mastering the BAPS board like it shows in the manual, and I was like, well, the last school that I worked at, they had a BAPS board, but there was never a manual, so I just did whatever I saw somebody else do before me, which is... you know, usually it works, but it's not a best practice. You know, you need to understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. So once you read the manual, and then I'll have you back on and you can just quote the manual for us. Sounds good? Sounds interesting?
Sounds good.
All right, so moving up the line just a little bit. I'm going to put you on the spot. I know I didn't put this in the notes, but what about the knee? Functional stuff for the knee?
I see the knee as one of those joints that is the knee gets hurt because there's something wrong with the hip or the ankle. I mean, unless, you know, somebody hits you with a bat in your knee or somebody dives at your knee with a helmet. But I think most of the knee injuries I see are due to hip motion is their hips are too tight or their ankles are too tight. So the body is trying to find excessive motion somewhere and then the knee suffers.
That's essentially... when I went to, like I said, I went to Arasti and they kind of checked me out. So this summer I was playing freeze tag with my kids at the church during vacation Bible school. Of course, I'm old, so I'd try to jump back and avoid the tag and land on my leg outstretched moving backwards. Well, then he's like, well, I don't think the problem is necessarily with your knee. It's that you have an immobile hip. And so the knee had to take that laxity or that it had to create motion in the knee so that because the hip didn't have the motion. So, but just some of the things like we got kids with knee problems, knee injuries. What are some of the exercises you like there for the knee?
With a lot of kids who they kind of come in with the general anterior knee pain, getting mobility in the hip, especially getting either foam rolling or some sort of instrument assisted massage to the quads. Most of those kids, if you palpate, especially rectus femoris, it hurts. And once you get that length back and then get the hip moving, a lot of time I see that pain go away. One of the keys I learned for exercise prescription for, you know, anterior knee pain is whatever lower body work you're doing, keep the shin vertical. So squats may not work for these kids for a while. I really like the split squat. Which would, I guess, be known as a stationary lunge, but they should be able to drop down and stand back up and their shin never, or their tibia never comes forward, which should alleviate discomfort at the patellar tendon. Same thing, I guess, with deadlifts. Ideally, your shin should not be moving forward if you do it right, which makes it more of a hip exercise. But I find those either regressions or body weight motions of those tend to help kids with that anterior knee pain.
Okay, I'll go with that. Keeping the shin vertical is a good rule of thumb for knee exercise with, you know, anterior knee pain. And again, the knee, most of the mobility, it's a hinge joint. So if, you know, if there's another problem, then also look at the ankle and the hip. Speaking of hip, I'm glad you brought us there, Jeremy. Shout out to the hip. Thanks for mentioning that. I almost forgot. Matt, what are some of your thoughts on the hip? Functional movement, functional exercises of the hip.
My favorite exercises for the hip are split squats, and then there's three. There's just your sagittal split squat, which looks like a lunge in place. Frontal split squats, which look kind of like a sideways lunge without moving. And then a transverse, which involves the way I teach it to the kids, imagine if your feet are split apart and you're standing on a giant clock. One foot is on 12 pointing forward, and then the other foot is either on 9 or 3 pointing to the side. So you're making like a 90 degree angle if you connected your legs together, and then you drop backwards into the split squat, which your hips have to rotate. So it becomes transverse plane motion. And go ahead.
So your feet are pointed in opposite directions at 90 degrees of each other, and you're squatting basically like with a wide leg squat. Is that what I'm understanding?
So he's going to go ahead and show it,
and I'm going to describe what I'm seeing. So, all right, so he's standing up. Yeah, so he's got, just like you said, one foot pointing like the 3 o'clock, one foot pointing at the 12 o'clock. Oh, and then he's just lunging, keeping the 12 o'clock leg straight, and then leaning back towards the back legs, or what would be the dial on the clock, not the dial, the centerpiece that holds the arms. There we go. All right. Okay. So that I got what you're talking about there. Go ahead.
Okay. And then you can, a lot of times for kids with really bad hip mobility, that is a stretch. Like they can barely get full range of motion and they say, oh, it feels like it's pulling. So the idea would be to progress it. Read the sign on the door. Yes, they can't read. You progress from it's a stretch to it's a body weight exercise to then you can add, you know, a weight vest or hold some dumbbells.
All right.
To get them, you know, once they got their mobility, now get them their strength.
So I know last year, I can't remember who it was we were talking about it, but you threw this out there and you sent me a video about the monster walks. That's one of the things you have up here, monster walks. Again, let me describe it and see if that's what you say. It's where you take a TheraBand that's basically tied together, so it makes a loop. You put it around about at your knees. You can put it at your ankles or at your knees. Usually it's right around the knees. And then they're just walking with tension on the TheraBand. Is that right?
Yes. I like to, I have a little progression for where I put the bands. I like to start them out with one just above the ankle and then another one just below the kneecap. So they have to wear two at first to kind of teach them to keep the knee and the ankle. So when they're walking, you know, they're not going into valgus collapse, which the band around the knee is supposed to, I guess, the term that I'm going to steal is reactive neuromuscular training, where you use a band to pull somebody into the bad way and their body has to then correct it to the good way. And then once they can handle it with two bands, I usually take the lower one off, keep the other one around the knees. But yeah, it's basically walking forwards, backwards, or side to side without valgus collapse.
Gotcha. All right, so that's the monster walk there. Frog stretch. I think this is what I saw my basketball players doing yesterday, but I'm not sure if that's correct. So you're going down into like a deep squat with basically your feet underneath your butt, like you're almost sitting on your heels, the knees kind of pointed outward, and then they put their elbows on the inside of their knees and kind of pressed. Is that correct?
That's not what I was thinking of.
Okay.
And you can, this one is, will be a YouTube this. I got this from a strength coach whose name is Dan John. But basically you get in a quadruped position with some sort of padding under the knees, which would be preferable. And then you abduct or try to get your knees as far apart as you can. And then using your hands on the ground as kind of a driver, you push your hips backwards. So you're going to feel most of the stretch either posterior chain or a lot of adductor stretching. And then there's some variations where one leg can be straight out to the side, or there's some hip rotations. But basically, I find it as a good hamstring / glute / adductor stretch.
All right, so I'm definitely have to YouTube frog stretch, and you said it was Rob Johnson?
Dan John.
All right, so continuing on, we're talking about functional rehab for the knee. So some of the ways you can do it is increasing mobility, and we're talking about some of the stretches or exercises that help increase that mobility there. You said hip flexor stretching, co-contracting the abdominals. Now, real quick, when I went to Arasti, they were working on stretching my hip flexors as I'm sitting here in a chair kind of stuck in one position, which is what I'm not supposed to be doing. But I was using the foam roller on my abs. So it was between the bottom of my rib cage and the top of my pelvis because of the hip flexors and the abdominal muscles there. Man, it's really uncomfortable. But what are your thoughts there on that as we're talking about hip and hip flexors?
I think the one thing I see when kids go into that little half kneeling hip flexor stretch and then they just kind of lunge forward. Ideally, yes, you should be stretching, getting some psoas, iliacus, rectus femoris stretching. However, most kids, if you look at them from the side, go into extreme lumbar extension, which then takes all the tension off the psoas and the iliacus. And then they're just stretching their abs, their abdominals, essentially. So what I teach, get in that stance, you know, half kneeling, and then have them either put their hands on their abdominals to brace or contract their abdominals and then lunge forward. And they don't have to move very far before they feel something in their hip. But the key is to keep the pelvis stable while the hip goes into extension, because otherwise they're just, you know, they're not actually stretching what they're supposed to be stretching.
Yeah, there's a definite difference whenever one of the things that I did, you know, doing the half kneeling, but I used the tall foam roller. And I don't know if you can see. So I'd be on the half kneeling, then I put my hands straight out and press down on it. So you're having to engage your core. So if you're doing this right in front of a treatment table, you'd kneel and then have your hands, you know, you could do it, put your hands on the treatment table and press down on onto the treatment table. And therefore you're having to engage your core and stay upright to press down correctly. And there's a definite difference whenever you're doing that versus just the lumbar extension. So
yes, that's a great, having, like you said, the foam roller or a table or anything, they can, if they can't contract their abdominals on their own, which some kids can't get that, but yeah, pressing down on something, they immediately will almost go into like a crunch, and then you feel the stretch. So in the right place.
All right. And then what else you got there?
The spine.
All right, so Jeremy just says we're moving on to the spine.
The spine, I would say I've learned a lot about the spine recently. Kind of the prevailing theory through all these joints that we're talking about. You can Google the joint by joint theory. It's basically an idea that as you work up from the feet to the head, the joints that movements go through should alternate in segments of mobility and stability. Like the ankle, you want mobility. In the knee, you want stability. The hip, you want mobility. The lumbar spine, you want stability. The thoracic spine, you want mobility. And then in the cervical spine, you want stability. So for spine exercises, you know, like you said, with the sitting all the time, you know, kids get stuck in a lot of lumbar extension. And then their T-spine or thoracic spine gets kind of caved in and stuck. And so when you ask them to rotate or do, you know, like your baseball pitchers, tennis kids who have to do a lot of rotation, they're going to end up typically with some sort of back pain because they're trying to get that rotational motion too much from the lumbar spine instead of the thoracic spine. So a lot of what I try to get the kids to do is how to keep your lumbar spine still, but yet gain the motion through your thoracic spine. I know you had a couple guys on, last year, talking about PRI, mm-hmm. And a lot of the breathing stuff, which I think that's important to do first, especially get the kids to breathe correctly and then go into some stretches or exercises. So I'd refer people back to that video for the breathing. But one I really like, just for gaining some motion in the thoracic spine, I call them quadruped T-spine rotations, where you are quadruped on all fours, and then put one hand behind your head like this. Or a lot of times I tell kids, just kind of touch your ear, because otherwise they start cranking on their neck and say, why does my neck hurt? But basically, as they are in the quadruped position, they drive their elbows toward each other and then away from each other, focusing on movement through the thoracic spine and not what I call the chicken wing, where they just do this and say, I don't feel anything.
All right.
Okay, and the next, this is especially to coaches who have their kids in the weight room, and to some, I haven't run into it as much with athletic trainers, but this next stuff is kind of heresy to some people, but I don't like crunches or repetitive flexion exercises for the core. There's a researcher up in Toronto, Dr. Stuart McGill, who basically determined that the way to rupture a disc in the lumbar spine is to do repeated flexion. And considering all the kids are sitting down in lumbar flexion and they're just kind of leaning forward all day, more flexion doesn't really help them. The exercises I do, I stole from another strength coach named Mike Boyle, but it's anti-exercises. So anti-rotation, anti-flexion, anti-lateral flexion, or anti-extension, where you use either your body or a dumbbell or a band to kind of pull the body into a, let's say, that motion, and then you have to resist and try to keep a straight spine, which I know that's a lot. But again, YouTubing anti-rotation, anti-flexion, you should find some good stuff on that.
All right, and there in the show notes, I think you've included that. I know you wrote the name Mike Boyle, and I know I've seen him on Twitter, and there's a lot of athletic trainers that like his stuff there. And I believe last year we had kind of had me, you, and Mike actually had a conversation via Twitter about the split squat and how it was better. I could be wrong, but I remember having at least you were in that conversation about, like you mentioned earlier, the split squat and how it's better for you than the regular squats. Keeping the shin upright and those kind of things. So again, I think Mike Boyle is probably a well-known name in exercises, so I definitely check him out there. All right, where were we talking about? So did you guys all catch that sitting right here, that crunches are bad for you? Yeah. All right, so just remember that crunches are bad for you. All right, they're bad for your back. So there's lots of other exercises you can do for your abs, which maybe Mr. Babisek will tell us about in here in a minute if we have some time. So, all right, stability ball rollouts. You know, I tried to do some of those the other day, and I think I got about 3 of them in, and I was sore for like a week. So those are pretty tough, but it's apparent that I don't have very strong abs because I couldn't do those exercises at all. So I definitely need to try some more, but I was waiting till I wasn't walking funny from my sore abs, so...
Start with a very big stability ball and progress to a smaller and smaller one.
Yeah, it was big. It was, I don't know, I think the biggest one they make. It's just really bad, really bad. I do a lot of push-ups, but that's about it for stability, core stability. So I've been incorporating other stuff. All right. But again, as we talk about functional movement, this is, again, addressing fixing the problem. And this isn't like sport-specific rehab. This is more fixing the dysfunction, right?
Yes.
All right. What else you got? Side planks. What's Poloff press?
Okay. So he's a physical therapist up in Boston. He works with Mike Boyle. His name's John Poloff. But I call the exercises band presses because nobody knows who John Poloff is. But basically, you can attach a band to, you know, a cable, or if you have a cable machine, that works even better. But you pull the band out or pull the cable out and stand, I guess, perpendicular to it and hold the band or cable in the center of your chest. And you want enough tension on it so that it's trying to pull you back. So you have to stabilize, and then I have the kids press out, and then the longer the lever arm gets, the more likely they're going to get yanked back. So the whole goal is to move your arms while maintaining a perfectly still spine. So to somebody who just walks into a weight room, it should look like a kid is standing there doing nothing. But yet if you get close, if they're doing it right, they're not going to be able to talk to you, and they're basically their entire core is going to be lit up trying to keep their spine straight.
All right. I'm going to have to probably look at that one on YouTube as well.
Yes.
So the Poloff press, again, core stability, increasing the stability there. So right, my kids are walking out, and we'll continue the show for just a little bit longer. So again, we're talking about functional rehab, ways to break free from the routine. I'm talking with Matt Babisek. So let's move on from the spine. We've got quite a list there. Again, check out the show notes. That'll be for this episode. And also, postural restoration, I went back and looked. It was number 125 when I had Josh Ogden and Mike McKinney. So it was pretty cool. They did some explaining, and it's pretty in-depth stuff. And it's not something that I think you can just watch one video and do. But I know, Matt, that you've watched a couple different videos, and you begin to incorporate some of them and had some success there. So check out our conversation with them and some of the YouTube videos that are out there. Or just go to the course, but that's a little pricey. So this is moving on to the shoulder. As Carlos was mentioning earlier, PNF exercises for the shoulder. What are some of your favorite functional rehab exercises or ways to fix the dysfunctional problem with the shoulder?
I think the first key for fixing shoulder problems is restoring normal thoracic spine motion. I think a lot of times the kids get so stuck with their T-spine forward that they have to essentially crank on their capsule in the shoulder just to throw a football, throw a baseball, hit a volleyball. So once you can open up their T-spine, then you can work on a whole butt, I guess, restoring normal mobility to the shoulder, as well as stability to, say, the scapula. So once you can get, you know, the spine stuff going, I really like an exercise where you stand perpendicular to a wall to where you could almost bump into the wall, and then try to do shoulder circumduction. And then when you get all the way up, rotate your palm toward the wall and try to come back down without moving too much or without bumping into the wall. And you'll see a lot of kids, you know, if they have limited motion or it's not very good, they're going to start to shrug and move in a whole bunch instead of just trying to have a normal shoulder range of motion. And then I would say probably the best thing to fix shoulder problems is to look at what the kids are doing in the weight room. Typically, it's a whole lot of pushing exercises. As I say, kids like to work out beach muscles, the ones that they can see when they look in a mirror. But it's the upper back musculature that will typically be neglected, and then kids start to have shoulder issues. So especially, I'll tell kids who have recurrent issues, for every one pushing exercise, you need to do two pulling to kind of negate all the bench press and all the incline that they love to do.
Yeah, and I'm, you can hear me here?
Yes.
All right, good, because I switched positions since the kids left. That way I can read some of these comments and go through things there. I'm guilty just as the kids, you know, like I'll go and do 100 push-ups, and then I'll do three sets of 10 on the TRX rowing thing. And I'm wondering why, you know, oh, my back is stiff, my back is sore. Well, it's because I need to strengthen it. But you just get into the habit. Yeah, well, you know, when I look in the mirror, I can see my chest is bigger. I can't see my back, so I'm just as guilty as those kids. So, all right, let's go through real quick some of these comments. Let me see. Carlos says muscle strength imbalance can cause knee pain, much like the tightness. So again, checking functional movement. And again, when I went to the Arasti, you know, one of the things is, like, I had to do mobility testing so that they could see where I was before and where I was after. But with the manual muscle testing, you can kind of do that some there, manual muscle testing. And one of the big things now, for especially for the ACL rehab, is using the handheld dynamometer, which, you know, some people are coming up with their own uses of that. I was just listening to one of my podcasts from where Ryan Collins was talking about how they use a strap hooked onto a fishing scale, like a digital fishing scale, and you can measure how many pounds of pressure is the person is pulling with or pushing with. So be a good way to test muscle strength and then address that issue. And like Matt said, avoid open chain exercises like the what is it called? Leg lifts? Not leg lifts.
Leg extensions.
Leg extensions and leg curls. There you go. So let me switch to my camera here. I'm terrible about that. And then Carlos again wants to ask, what do you think about planks? As I was talking about my push-ups earlier, what do you think about planks as far as core stability, Matt?
I like planks, front planks, side planks. I see it as more of a core strength exercise. If you start to, let's say you lift an arm up or you lift a leg and have some sort of disruption or perturbation, then it becomes, I think, a stability exercise. But if they're just holding perfectly still, I see it more as a core strength exercise. So some kids can fake it if they, they're pulling in their lats or their glutes, and some other bigger muscles can try to hold still. But a lot, if kids have like zero core stability, you'll see them real quick. They'll start sagging in the middle, or they hike their butt up in the air to fake it that way.
As you're talking about the perturbations there, one thing that I do with some of my a little bit more advanced ankle sprains is if I'm holding the TheraBand, I'll actually just wiggle it back and forth. Instead of it just being one static spot, like I'll just kind of wiggle it. Even just that little bit of motion creates a lot more resistance, a lot more dynamic type exercise. And at least that's what I think. So
I like that.
So, all right, so just going through some of that there. Now, you said you do like the TRX for shoulder stuff as well?
I love the TRX, yes. I have one of my own. When I was down there at Pasadena Memorial, we got a grant for weight room equipment, and the coach involved in that was very receptive to, this way of thinking. So we actually got five of them, so we could hook one on each squat rack. So, you know, we had kids doing TRX every day. And it was, I think it worked for, you know, for a lot of kids, just preventing shoulder problems in the first place, once they understand how to pull and how to use a lot of those upper back muscles.
All right. So I think we glazed over this at the beginning. Talk about some of the success that you've seen personally from being more proactive in preventing injuries and fixing this dysfunction before it's a problem, or like the decrease in re-injury and non-contact injury. So some of the success that you've personally had from applying this stuff we're talking about.
Okay. When I worked down there in Pasadena with you, it was my first job out of grad school. And my first year, I saw just what I thought was an inordinate amount of ACL tears, and then weekly or sometimes daily complaints of my shoulders hurt, my knees hurt, my back hurts. Well, what'd you just get done doing? Oh, well, we did heavy bench, or we did heavy squat, or and then especially I know our soccer teams, it just seemed like every other day there was a hamstring strain, hip flexor strain, adductor strain. And I thought that shouldn't be happening so much. So I started working with all of the female teams, all the girls' sports teams in the weight room. Yeah, they can't read still. And basically starting out with a lot of this, trying to restore normal motion through hips, through spine, through shoulders. My boys' soccer coach kind of saw, hey, the girls are looking pretty good. They're not getting hurt as much. And my guys are always hurt. So I started taking them into the weight room. And then I know the next, about a year after the boys started, we went from probably, I want to say, you know, 10, 15 cases of, oop, this pulled or this strained, to maybe one or two over the whole next season. So the preventative stuff, if we can get the time and if the coaches will listen, I think it can make a huge difference. But you got to put a lot in on the front end to get that done. And I will say I had a very receptive coworker in Miss Catherine Vollmer to let me take time out from being in the athletic training room to get those kids into the weight room to then ideally keep them out of the training room.
Yeah, and I know she loved that you kept the kids out, because y'all didn't see hardly any girl athletes. But then at the same time, like you said, it just consumes a lot of your time. And that's the same thing we've been saying over and over. So it's one of those things, we have to figure out what we can do and what we can't do. But if our job is to prevent injuries, then that's where we need to focus and spend most of our time. You just got to figure out the best way to do that. So I think that's why programs like FMS or SFMA or the PRI, those kind of things, they allow you to test and check and then teach them how to do it on their own. So definitely things that we need to look into as athletic trainers. So what about elbow injuries? What are some things that you might like to do for somebody with an elbow injuries?
I think that also goes back to the look at the joint above and below, look at their shoulder, look at their wrist. Unless they, you know, they fell on an extended arm and caused direct trauma to the elbow, a lot of elbow issues, I know the popular thing now is, well, just tear up your elbow, you can get Tommy John surgery.
Right.
It's going to be from improper motion throwing. So can they not get the motion from the shoulder? Is their T-spine locked up? I think for the elbow, you really got to especially for throwers, know what they should look like. A lot of it, sit down with the kid and have them watch, you know, maybe what a major league pitcher or a professional or collegiate athlete who's got the proper mechanics, and then either have use the coach video the kid, or if you have time to go out there, video the kid throwing and then show them, hey, this is, you look like this. This is why you are in pain. This is what you should look like. Now let's work towards it.
Okay, so kind of to sum up what I think I just heard is, okay, it's the same, kind of the same as the knee. Again, you want stability in the elbow, whereas you want mobility in the glenohumeral joint, and you want mobility in the wrist. So again, finding out what the dysfunction is, and then going from there. So what are some of the ways you think you could identify dysfunction for an elbow injury?
I think typically what I see with the baseball and softball kids is they'll come in and they'll just start to, you know, they don't necessarily say something hurts, but they all start wanting ice. Can I get ice for my elbow? Can I get ice for my arm? And then just say, okay, well, here, let me take a look at you. Look at, you know, maybe their wrist range of motion. Do they have limited wrists? And then test shoulder range of motion. See, are they limited somewhere? Give them one or two things to do. Say, okay, well, if you want to come get ice, I need you to do these stretches, or I need you to work on this. Okay, well, now you can get your ice. And then eventually, hopefully, they're doing the exercises enough, and then, oh, hey, I don't need ice.
Yeah, I like that. I know that there's been a big debate as far as ice and not icing, and so it's one of those, again, people are passionate on both sides of it, but if you're giving them what they want and giving them what they need, then that's going to be the best situation, because you've said, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do what your coach says. I'm not going to do what you want. I'm just going to do this. Well, they're like, oh, well, I don't care. I'll just stop coming. But like, all right, same deal with us. Our coaches want our players' ankles taped. Every varsity game day, all the players get taped. So I'm like, that's nice, but that doesn't do anything. So like every time everybody at this school gets their ankle taped, unless it's like an immediate on the field thing. So if they're getting them taped before, then they're going to do the ankle exercises, you know, band work, proprioception, that kind of stuff, because we want them to know that they have to do that work to get stronger. So again, I really like that, taking or giving them what they want and giving them what they need. So I like that a lot. So we just have to be able to identify the dysfunction either in the shoulder or the wrist. Of course, it could be just an elbow issue where they hit the elbow or something like that. But
yeah. So. But 6 weeks into the season, if their elbow bruise hasn't gotten any better with just ice, then you got to have the sit down of, hey, let's look at something else here.
Yep. All right, it is getting close to our hour mark. So talk to me quickly about some of the resources that you recommend. I know we talked about Boyle and a great cook with the FMS and that kind of thing, but some of the things that you listed in here, just mention those briefly and why you like them.
Okay, there's two websites I listed first. They are subscription-based, so if you have some disposable income for learning, I like them. Strengthcoach.com, that is Michael Boyle's little site. It's got great stuff for, you know, rehab and strength work, and then a lot of agility stuff too. Sports Rehab Expert, it's run by a PT from Michigan, I think. His name is Joe Heiler, but it's similar. It's a pay site, but he's got a ton of exercises, videos, articles, interviews with other professionals. I really like both of those. You can get lost, say, on maybe a staff development day, if you get to hide in your office and just read and watch stuff for hours. I like that. Functionalmovement.com is the website for FMS or the SFMA. If you are certified, there's kind of a certified person area and then the everybody area. But I really, if you can get your school to pay for it, the FMS certification, I think, is less than $200. If you can find it in your town, I'd say that I would recommend that to every athletic trainer. And if you can get a couple coaches, especially if you have a strength coach at your school, get them to do it too. Because if you're on the same page that way, that can, I think, solve a lot of problems and prevent a lot of issues. And I'm going to have to take a page from you, Jeremy, and try to write a grant or go through Donors Choose to get my SFMA certification, which is the It's FMS for medical professionals, ATCs, PTs, MDs, and chiros. But it's anywhere from $700 to $1,000, depending on where it is. So I'm going to have somebody help me out with that one.
Yeah, the conference I went to this summer where I actually met up with you at that barbecue place, Pecan Lodge in Dallas, that was because I was on a grant from Donors Choose. And so it's a new system. I would definitely look at checking it out. Donors Choose or Fund for Teachers is another great one. Fund for Teachers would give you up to $5,000 to travel and bring this back. And so I've already wrote one last year, but I had to pull it out because Jesse was going to go with this and he tore his ACL and he wasn't going to be able to go to the conference because of the rehab schedule. And so I was like, well, and we had some other reasons, but it was good. I had actually made it past the first round and was, I wish I'd kind of let it go and just see if I had been accepted, but I didn't want to rob somebody else. So definitely check out fundforteachers.org or, like you said, Donors Choose. They're doing something similar. Those are great ways to get those paid for. And if you need help with that, I would talk to Matt about some of the success he's had. Brett McQueen does a lot of functional movement stuff. So find him on Twitter, Brett McQueen. So I think it's Lightning McQueen or Lightning Solutions. I can't remember because I'm just off the top of my head. But and then obviously I've written plenty of grants and I can probably give you some encouragement or point you in the right direction in case you get lost. So that's a great idea. Let somebody else help you pay for it. Plus most schools will give us, so like our school district is going to give us $500 a piece per summer. So for us three to go, they're going to give us, $1,500 plus the fund for teachers. So basically we would have had for the three of us $11,500 to go to, and the only one during the summer we could go to was in Canada. So we were going to go to Canada, be there for a week, get the FMS 1 and 2 over the course of the weekend, interview some people for the podcast, and pretty much have most of it paid for. So it would have been really cool had we have been able to make it work, but I would say somebody else steal my idea, make it work for you, save your kids and your community a good bit of money and time by preventing injuries and do your job better. So
I like it.
Check it out. All right, anything else there?
Two books I would recommend people to read. First one's, it's called Movement. It's written by Gray Cook, who's the inventor of the functional movement screen. It's got all the tests for the FMS and the SFMA in it. But if you want a resource for really challenging you on why are you moving, having people move a certain way, why are you doing this, why, it's a very good read. And then if you can transition this stuff into the weight room, Mike Boyle, his book called Advances in Functional Training, I think that's an excellent read as well. And there's a lot of sample workouts and training programs in that as well.
All right. Lots of good information. Again, that stuff's in the show notes. I typed it into the little chat room here. The website may be easier to get it from the show notes once this post comes live, or I can send it to you if you email me, and definitely be happy to share all the great information that I've given you. Matt, I'm going to let you think just a second. Any parting thoughts, any one key word of wisdom? So I'm going to go through some of this other stuff and I'm going to come back to you. All right. So sportshealth.com/SMBA. I've talked about it before. I tweet about it all the time. It's really cool. The backpack, the Kramer Tough Tech backpack, they send that to me for free to test out just to see what I like. They want me to tweet about it, talk about it. And it's really cool. I like it a lot better than carrying that big green med pack kit. Because it's just the weight is distributed across my shoulders. It's more comfortable. I literally taught a whole 45-minute class with it on just so that I can say, yes, I've worn it for a long time. It's fully loaded. I wore it for 45 minutes. It's not something I would recommend doing, but it can be done. Whereas with that green bag, it just would not have happened with that med pack, the single shoulder, single strap one. So sportshealth.com/SMB, because every single month you can register to win a gift card from School Health, and I don't believe there's any restrictions on as far as if you can win month after month. Matt, you almost won the first month because whenever I first checked, it was like just a couple days until the end of the month, and you were the only person that had registered. So you just got unlucky. Somebody, so a couple of other people registered right there at the end, and somebody took it from you. But the December code is FOOBAG, FOOBAG. Again, FOOBAG. They're really cool bags. Check them out. I know they have them at sportshealth.com. And again, the coupon code will be there on SMB after you register. And then Israel, Montano down there in the Valley Athletic Trainer Association. They've been doing a lot of promoting for the podcast as well. So definitely thank you there, Israel, for your help. And then that's why we got John and Carlos jumping in. They're down there in the Valley as well. So VATARGV.org, the Valley Athletic Trainers Association, Rio Grande Valley, VATARGV.org. Hopefully this summer I'm going to be broadcasting from SPATS, which is the South Padre Athletic Trainers Symposium. So I've heard a lot of good things from people. I haven't been there yet, but hopefully this summer I'll go and be able to broadcast an interview and check that out there. All right, so now we're going to come back to Matt. Matt, what do you say one big takeaway from about functional rehab?
Make sure that what you're doing in the athletic training room with your athletes is carrying over to your athletes' athletic performance and kind of their everyday life.
All right. That's a great way to sum it up there. That's exactly what I wanted to know, just carrying it over into everyday life. All right, and obviously I'm Jeremy Jackson, host of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. That can be found at sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Almost every single Wednesday we're live. You can join in the conversation. Usually I'm on Twitter. Again, at any point in time, you should be able to search on Instagram, hashtag SAT scavenger hunt. If you look at 2015 or 2014, maybe, you know, next year, 2016, those things, I think it's going to be really fun, especially if we can get it to grow to more and more schools. And it's just really fun for the kids to look and see all these other student athletic trainers, like I said, from Amarillo participating in this. And it's really fun to see the administration doing Taylor Swift's dance or whatever it is. So check that out. Again, I'm Jeremy Jackson on Twitter at PHS Sports Med. So Jeremy, Sports Medicine One Kids, Matt Babisek at Mesquite West. Matt, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
Probably via email. That would be M Babisek or M B A B I S A K at hotmail.com.
Hotmail. All right, so M B A B I S A K at hotmail.com.
Yes.
All right, so definitely hit up Matt. Maybe y'all can collaborate on a grant, because those Fund for Teachers grants, actually, you don't have to be within the same district. So like if I was going to write it, I could include you in it, and then I'd have to justify how we're going to collaborate on that. And so that's why it's obviously a lot easier for me to collaborate with the people within my district. So if you got a real passion for FMS, or if you used it, talk to Matt. Maybe y'all can work together on a grant and y'all can bunk up together in Canada or Germany or wherever it is this summer. So all right, well, that's pretty much it for today. Thanks for joining us. We had a great crowd there in the live stream. We had plenty of viewers. And so for Jeremy, that's a wrap. All right, so for you guys that are listening live, I just went ahead and started it. We can kind of start the conversation. It's going to be about 5 minutes till my students get in here. And so when they come in, they end up making a good bit of noise. This is only the second time we've done this. They're still learning. And so we're going to go ahead and start some of this conversation. Maybe we can talk about some of the stuff that we've seen in here in the chat room. So pretty excited about the good group we have here with Mickey, with Rob, Israel, Carlos, and John. John watched last week, but he didn't get to log in because my instructions were not clear enough. So, but he's logged in this week. We're good to go. Carlos, first time joining us from Juarez, Lincoln, and then Israel. I know I emailed him last week. I think I said Montoya, and it's Montano, and he's down there in Corpus Christi, or in the valley with Juarez, Lincoln as well, in La Jolla. So, all right. So, Matt.
Yes.
All right. Go ahead and talk again, Matt.
I'm here. Please tell me you can hear this.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was just a little quiet there for a second, so I'm not sure if you guys heard it all. That was the bell, so it'll be about 5-6 minutes before the kids can get down here. They walk slow, so. All right, so, man, I wish I had a way for more people to join in. All right, I'm going to try something. John, I'm going to, let's see, no, eject, bite. Well, there's supposed to be a way I can invite people to Rob. I'm going to just click invite now, and I'm going to see what happens. So we may be able to see Rob in the bottom corner there. If you don't have a camera or a microphone, then you don't have to accept the invite, but give it a shot. And it may not end up recapturing your audio anyway, so I guess it's not a great idea to test things on the day of the podcast. Huh?
As you go.
Yeah. Is it getting cold up there, Matt?
Not at all. It's supposed to be 90 degrees today.
Oh, nice. Oh.
Wonderful October in Texas.
All right, so it shows that Rob is here. Rob, if you're talking, then I can't hear you. So again, it may just be the way I have the computer set up. So you could type it in there if you're talking or telling me anything. So looks like you jumped out. So it's all right. All right, so Matt, what do you think about PNF stretching for the shoulder?
I like it. It's probably not done enough, but I think a lot of that is just the time that it takes. And if you got, you know, 5 or 6 kids in the training room, then spending that much time with one kid can... That's my excuse anyway.
Right.
But
yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if we scheduled appointments, then it'd be easy.
That would be nice to get them in, stretch them out, then have them do some resisted stuff, some rhythmic stabilization, and then send them to do whatever they can complete on their own or a modified weight room workout.
Yeah, so that's one of the things Carlos threw out there was PNF stretching for the shoulder. So, he said coworker likes marble pickups for the ankle. So as we're talking about functional movement, what do you think about marble pickups?
I like them, I guess, less for ankle and more for foot issues like arches, or we've had kids who have bunions who have very limited, or some weird bunion turf toe combo where they have very limited toe motion. So I think it works better, in my opinion, for foot and toe stuff. Because I've seen kids who can do it without moving their ankle at all and just kind of use a toe and pick it up and go.
Computer lab.
There you go. So apparently the kids can read the signs, but...
Sometimes adults cannot.
Sometimes adults cannot. All right, let me see. I think Israel... So he loves the star ankle workout along with the marble pickup. Have you ever heard about that?
Is that where they stand on like a star or asterisk shaped grid and then reach with the other limb, the other leg or an arm?
That's what I'm assuming.
I like that. Either set out either cones, or I use like little cans of QDA that we have a ton of and just set them out in a pattern and they have to either squat or reach. But yeah, I like that for multi-planar ankle work. Once they've mastered the TheraBand, that gets kind of boring.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a BAPS board there in Mesquite?
We do.
We did at the last squat work that, but we don't have one here. So one of the things he said, I think Carlos asked if you've ever had anybody master the BAPS board. I'm not quite sure what it means to master the BAPS board, but...
I've had a couple kids who can get to level 5 and not make any noise, which I tell them, if you can do a circle, that's great, but if you can do the circle without making a sound, that shows a little more control. I like to add in the little, I think they're 1 or 2 pound weights to screw in, and then have them alternated around. I think there's 6 places you can screw them in and just have them kind of move them around and try different combos.
Yeah.
But yes, the BAPS board, that is a staple for me here with our ankle kids.
All right. My kids are filtering in now. So yeah, with the BAPS board, again, it's, you know, we have so many kids, but we only have one BAPS board. I think it costs like $300 or something like that. It's kind of expensive.
Yeah, for the board and the handle and the different sized balls and then the weight sets. Yeah, I've seen them more expensive than that. So yeah, they're pretty pricey.
That's what I was thinking. So